Welcome to today's sermon. I'm Mike Adams with abundance.church. Please feel free to visit that website and join the email list to be alerted about other sermons and songs and reference materials and things like that that we're going to be publishing. The topic for today is frankincense, which astonishingly we have not covered frankincense yet, even though it's, of course, mentioned as one of the gifts presented to Mary, the mother of Jesus, by the three wise men. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Sounds pretty interesting. We've covered myrrh, and we know all about myrrh right now. What an interesting resin. And we've covered a little bit about aloes as well. But frankincense is mentioned very prominently throughout the Old Testament and a few times in the New Testament, and then also once in the book of Revelation. So let's take a closer look at what is frankincense. Obviously, it's used as an offering. It's used as a kind of incense, but it has other uses as well that you may not be familiar with. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 11, "And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him." This is talking about the three wise men. "And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." Now, as is also often the case, when we get to parts of the Bible where God is talking about what will be taken away from humanity when humanity turns from his teachings or turns from his blessings, frankincense is mentioned in the book of Revelation, chapter 18, which we will cover chapter 18 separately, but for this sermon, we're just covering the frankincense factor, and we'll get into some of the science behind what's in frankincense and what are the uses. But I do want to mention that with the fall of Babylon in Revelation chapter 18, this is very important, I believe, because, you know, some people believe that Babylon is talking about modern-day America. I don't have a strong opinion on that, but I do believe that the Bible speaks to different time periods simultaneously. So it's possible that Babylon in the book of Revelation referred to literal Babylon, and also could refer to, possibly, America today, or in particular, a city such as New York City. Just be open to that possibility. But let me read for you Revelation chapter 18, verse 9. And remember, these are the words that John heard from God, and then he wrote this down. And we don't know for sure who that John is, but probably John the Apostle. Anyway, verse 9, "The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning." Oh, you know what? Let me back up. Let me give you a little bit more before we get to this. Let's back up to the beginning of chapter 18, because this context is important. So chapter 18, this is about the fall of Babylon and all the things that are taken away from mankind because mankind turned against God. "So after these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, 'Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird.'" That sounds exactly like Washington, D.C. today, doesn't it? Or even certain elements of, New York City, the abortion hub of America, things like that. Verse 3, "For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." Oh, isn't that true? "The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works. In the cup which she has mixed, mix double for her. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. Therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine. And she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. Now, I guess I should mention that when they say her, this is referring to the woman described in the earlier chapter, chapter 17, that rode the beast, or at least interpreted in chapter 17, rode the beast with the seven heads and the 10 horns. So remember that the 10 horns may depict 10 kingdoms or 10 nations, and the seven heads may depict either seven national leaders or seven different servants of Satan. In fact, this is interpreted. Let me just read you the interpretation from chapter 17, verse 9. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Five have fallen. One is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seven and is going to perdition. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Right? So this is a complex riddle to try to understand. These are of one mind and they will give their power and authority to the beast. So these are 10 kings or 10 kingdoms that are giving their authority to the beast or the satanic system, the globalist system. Verse 14, these will make war with the Lamb, that is war on the church, war on Christ, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. So that's the woman. And in verse 18 of chapter 17 says, and the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So if you were to translate this into the modern day, what would be the one city that reigns over the kingdoms of at least Western civilization? Some might argue it's the city of London. Some might say Washington, D.C. Some might say the Vatican. I guess there are different takes on it, or maybe all three in different ways. Maybe those three are three of the horns. Or three of the heads. Maybe we'll get more clues about this. But anyway, in chapter 18, it talks about how horrible this woman is, or at least the symbol of this woman. You know, therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. So if this is talking about a city, if it's Washington, D.C., then the Bible is telling us that Washington, D.C. will be burned with fire and it will all come in one day. The plagues will come in one day. Or maybe it's New York City or like I said, maybe it's London. Verse 9, the king of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her, that is, all the nations that were in league with this satanic, you know, multinational leader, will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city of Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. This is a really important statement here. In 1 hour your judgment will come. I'm going to cover this in more detail in the sermon where I go through chapter 18 of Revelation. But as a teaser, I would like you to think about what kinds of things can destroy a city in 1 hour, like a giant tidal wave or, you know, a nuclear detonation or something like that. Verse 11, and the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. So global economic collapse, the banking system collapses. Verse 12, merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron, and marble. And then verse 13, this is where we get to frankincense. He says, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men. Whoa! It's more than just your cinnamon and frankincense that will be taken away from you. It's the bodies and souls of men. Souls will be taken. So this is more than just, you know, a kinetic war or the kinetic destruction or the burning of a city. This is the soul sucking of a city, and the bodies too, you know, plus the frankincense on top of that. The cattle and the sheep, the horses and the chariots. But I keep wondering, where are the goats? They didn't mention any goats. The goats are still here. Oh, okay. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. Now, see, I think this is speaking to a global economic collapse, a sudden economic collapse event that strikes Western civilization. Verse 15, the merchants of these things, you know, all the gold and the silks and everything, who became rich by her, will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. Now, what does it mean for a city to be weeping and wailing? Well, you would hear sounds and winds if a city were struck by a nuclear weapon, wouldn't you? Or if a giant meteor fell out of the sky and struck a city, giant, you know, crater, giant mushroom cloud, kaboom, you might describe that as torment, weeping, and wailing. That's what I think. Anyway, verse 16, and saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in one hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance. In other words, they didn't want to get too close to this city because it's being destroyed. And cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like this great city? They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, and saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in one hour she is made desolate. Wow. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. And the next verse is also kind of a well-known verse, 21. Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. So we'll get into this more when we cover that chapter of the book of Revelation. But today we're trying to focus on frankincense. I keep getting distracted by that. But frankincense was clearly depicted as something of great value in the Bible, a gift and something to be taken away from cities that turn against God. Now, if we go to my favorite reference book, The Herbs of the Bible by Dr. James Duke, it lists possible benefits of frankincense as dysentery, fever, gonorrhea, polyps, and there are a lot of folklore uses that we'll get to. He says, the wise men brought the newborn Jesus three gifts: gold to recognize his kingship, frankincense to acknowledge his holiness or divinity, and myrrh to symbolize the hardship and suffering that he would endure. Frankincense is an important ingredient of incense. Literally, frank means free, and incense means lighting. So the Arabic word for frankincense, luban or luban, means milk of the Arabs. Interesting. So frank incense, frankincense. Frank is free. Incense is light, like incendiary, kind of the same word root. So frank incense, the freedom of light. The aromatic gum obtained by means of incisions in the stem was used for incense, perfume, holy ointments, and as a fumigant. It was imported by caravan from Arabia and East Africa. The plant did not grow in Israel. Frankincense was highly esteemed by the Egyptians for embalming and fumigating. See? So these three things, aloes, myrrh, and frankincense, you know, they're all resins. And they all are used in embalming in ancient Egypt. And then they all became used in various forms of perfumery, fumigation, or, you know, incense offerings to God in the Middle East. And as you know from previous sermons, sometimes people would fumigate their clothing with this, which I would imagine would be a really good bug repellent. And then they would burn this incense in the temples, and then sometimes people would put things like cinnamon, ground up cinnamon, in their bed, and sometimes possibly with frankincense or myrrh. So cinnamon and myrrh mentioned in Song of Solomon that we did the song about. So here's how frankincense is made. Incisions are cut into the bark of the frankincense shrub. The milky juice that exudes hardens into tears within a few weeks. These tears are collected. They are favored in Lebanon primarily as incense and secondarily as a medicine or cosmetic. Frankincense is used today as incense in Roman Catholic churches, and the essential oil of frankincense, or what's called oil of olibanum, is used in high-grade perfumes, especially for oriental and floral types. And there are several modern perfumes that contain frankincense. By the way, as you know, I am not fond of any kind of artificial fragrances. In fact, I abhor synthetic fragrances. But for those who have perfumes based on essential oils, like real, you know, real oils or real herbs, I welcome that. And those are, you know, much, much better to use, much healthier to use. And some of them are, in fact, medicinal. In Tanzania, the resin from frankincense is boiled in sesame oil, and it's taken for schistosomiasis, a parasitic disease. That's interesting. Got parasites? Frankincense does the trick. Recent authorities maintain that the incense used in the tabernacle was a mixture of frankincense, galbanum, what is this, onycha, and stacte. I'm not even familiar with those. The use of any incense not composed of these four ingredients, nor in the proper proportions, was strictly forbidden. That's interesting. Hopefully we'll learn about those other two ingredients, or three ingredients, soon. East Africans use frankincense resin to treat syphilis, and Asian Indians use the resin for rheumatism and disorders of the nervous system. A dose of 35 grains of frankincense is said to improve the memory. That's interesting. Inhaling vapors from frankincense is said to alleviate bronchitis and laryngitis. The bark resin is used as a tonic and a diuretic in East Africa. The Chinese use frankincense for urogenital ailments and is used in Asia for leprosy and rheumatism. It's also been suggested as a mosquito repellent. Not surprised to hear that. Do you have any frankincense? I have some. And if you burn it, you're like, whoa. Yeah, that could keep the mosquitoes away. Let me see if I can find it in this other book, Plants of the Bible. The problem with this book is that it's organized by the type of plant. It's got like fruit trees and then forest shrubs, thorns and thistles, you know. You have to try to, like, what is this thing? Oh, here it is, frankincense. It's under drugs and spices, incense and perfume. Oh, and here we find the quote from Exodus that refers to the other spices. It says, take sweet spices, stacte and onycha and galbanum, sweet spices with pure frankincense, and make an incense blended as by the perfumer, seasoned with salt, pure and holy. Interesting. Frankincense was an important ingredient of incense and also of perfume. The resins from the two species, and probably of others of the 24 species of the genus Boswellia. Oh, that's interesting. Occurring in Arabia and East Africa, these are exudations like those of balm and myrrh, commonly traded throughout the ancient world. By the way, Boswellia herb is known as a source of boswellic acid, which is really good for inflammation. I don't know if that's related to this. Maybe we'll find out. Commonly traded throughout the ancient world with other costly commodities, frankincense was imported into the land of Israel by the Phoenicians via the famous spice route across southern Arabia and some of the stations of East Africa, a caravan highway. Today, frankincense is frequently used as incense in the ceremonies of the Roman Catholic Church. It's also widely used in medicine. The Hebrew name for frankincense is Levona or Levonach, maybe. The identification of Boswellia with Levonach is well-founded, and linguistic support is furnished by the Arabic name Luban. Interesting. So the exudation from the shrubs produces drops that are shiny, yellowish, or reddish, highly aromatic, and bitter. So there you go. Now, in the world of natural medicine, I have heard of people using frankincense to, or essential oil frankincense, as a cancer treatment. I don't know how much literature there is on that. It's just something that I've seen. So I thought I would look that up for you. And sure enough, in the National Library of Medicine, if you go to, there's a journal called Oncotarget or Oncology Target. Here's a study published in 2019. Frankincense essential oil suppresses melanoma cancer through downregulation of the BCL2 Bax cascade signaling and ameliorates hepatotoxicity, that's liver toxicity, via phase 1 and 2 drug metabolizing enzymes. So there we go. Natural products that induce cytotoxicity with minimum side effects are of interest. Cytotoxicity is cell death of the cancer cells. And so they looked at frankincense essential oil in both in vitro and in vivo models, and they found that frankincense induces a significant dose-dependent reduction in the cell viability of both mouse and human melanoma cells, but not in normal human epithelial melanocytes. So, it shows that frankincense essential oil significantly reduced the tumor burden in the mice melanoma model. Whoa, but here's something else. Whoa, I didn't even know this. So from the study, it says they were trying to test if frankincense essential oil can protect the liver from liver damage caused by acetaminophen, you know, common over-the-counter painkiller. So here they write, acetaminophen was used to induce liver injury in Swiss albino mice. They were pre-treated with frankincense essential oil for 7 days. And let's see, they kept track of all these parameters, blood parameters, liver parameters. I'm paraphrasing. Further liver histology showed that frankincense essential oil treatments reversed the damage caused by acetaminophen. Central vein dilation damage, hemorrhage damage, and nuclei condensation damage. Wow. In conclusion, frankincense essential oil elicited marked anti-melanoma in both in vitro and in vivo with a significant hepatoprotection. So it is known then, frankincense is known to induce tumor remission, apoptosis or cell death of cancer cells, and it's known to protect the liver. Now, see, that's interesting. I did not know that. What I have known as a powerful natural molecule for liver protection is called glycyrrhizin, and it's found in licorice root. And licorice root is such an outstanding source of glycyrrhizin, which protects the liver, that I have for years told people, if you drink alcohol, before you drink, take some licorice root, you know, the herb, which also tastes kind of sweet, by the way. I'm not talking about licorice candy. I'm talking about the actual licorice root, which is also used very heavily in traditional Chinese medicine, by the way. It's one of the ingredients that makes Chinese medicine powders taste palatable, the cinnamon and the licorice root. By the way, so acetaminophen causes liver damage. And there are tens of thousands of people just in America each year who suffer liver damage, some of them permanent liver damage, because of over-the-counter painkillers, such as acetaminophen. And it turns out that if you take acetaminophen while also drinking alcohol, which a lot of people do on, let's say, a New Year's Eve party, you know, they drank too much, they partied too hard, and so they take some painkillers, just over-the-counter painkillers, permanent liver damage. alcohol plus acetaminophen can destroy your liver. But frankincense essential oil can protect your liver, as can licorice root. So you see, I've talked a lot about the molecular armor of God. This is a very clear example of it, where God provides an herb, frankincense. It's mentioned, you know, 100 times probably in the Bible. And it's part of even the Roman Catholic Church today, and it's part of what the wise men gave Jesus, or the Mother Mary at the birth of Jesus. This natural medicine itself is a molecular armor of God for your liver, the essential oil of frankincense. So it can protect your liver from alcohol, which many people rooted in sin may over-imbibe, and it can also protect against shadow medicine or over-the-counter painkillers. So that's incredible news. I mean, it just shows yet again that the molecular armor of God, that concept, is woven into the tapestry of Scripture in the Old Testament and the New Testament, even in the book of Revelation. Why is frankincense valuable? Liver protection. Not just an offering to God in terms of incense, and oh, you can only enter the tabernacle if you're burning the right incense, but liver protection. Can you think of a reason why liver protection might be important? How about biological weapons being unleashed to achieve global depopulation with spike proteins and all kinds of, you know, horrible injections and mRNA, gene-altering shadow medicine, demonic medicine that fills people's blood with alien proteins that are not human, that do not belong in the human body? Would you want your liver to be protected? Well, the studies show, and by the way, we can find a lot more studies on this. I just pulled up the first one that I saw on PubMed, but there are no doubt thousands of studies about frankincense, and they will show you this is literally the molecular armor of God for liver protection and perhaps neurological protection as well. There are also known to be, you know, anti-inflammatory properties and you know, anti-tumor properties and things like that. Now, by the way, when you hear me say these things, don't interpret that as, you know, I'm not telling you to take a specific dose. I'm not telling you to self-diagnose. None of those things. What I encourage you to do is to, if you have a health complaint, find a naturopath. Find a naturopathic physician who knows natural medicine. They don't even have to be licensed by the state, in my opinion. I don't like the fact that the state licenses doctors, because then the state controls what they're allowed to say. I would much rather go to somebody who has a broad spectrum of knowledge about herbs and natural medicine, and maybe also about faith would be a bonus. And also if they understand anatomy and basic physiology and biochemistry and so on, that would be a great person to go to. And there are a lot of really gifted naturopaths and herbalists and natural medicine practitioners. For me personally, I don't need them to have a license. In fact, a license is actually kind of a red flag for me. I would much rather go to somebody who has knowledge. And so if you have a health complaint, go to them. And, you know, Western medicine can be useful for things like imaging or diagnostics or blood tests or what have you. You know, the MRI is a non-invasive procedure for imaging. So Western medicine has a place, but Western medicine is horrible at preventing or treating chronic degenerative conditions such as cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes, you know, blood pressure disorders, osteoporosis, hormonal disorders, things like that. So I say go to a naturopath and let them know what you eat, what supplements you take, what personal care products you might use, what kind of superfoods you might take in, you know, things like that. And let that naturopathic physician then give you a diagnosis and give you recommendations on doses of things. So, you know, understand, I am not here to give you, I'm not practicing medicine here. I'm giving you knowledge about the molecules that God put on this earth. But it takes someone working with you face-to-face to be able to tell you correctly how much to take of which things. And that's something that has to be personalized to you. So keep that in mind. Now, frankincense, it's readily available as an essential oil. So it might not be a bad idea to have some on your shelf, like a medicine chest, have some frankincense oil, have some myrrh, have some of these other superfoods and nutrients that I talk about here. You know, you can build up quite a natural medicine chest, but I also believe the best thing is to grow as much of this as you can. If you can grow figs, you're growing medicine. If you can grow apricots, you're growing medicine. If you can grow wormwood herb, you can get the artemisinin out of it, a malaria cure. So grow as much as you can, and the things that you can't grow, then you can acquire and often, you know, stockpile or store for your emergency medicine chest. Or maybe you can get seeds and, you know, to grow later on, maybe when you have more time. But the bottom line is, frankincense is a very powerful natural medicine, and it's strongly associated with spiritual purity, spiritual cleanliness. And remember how God said, this is Old Testament God, this is Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, you can't enter the tabernacle unless you are clean. You have to have clean blood in order to be of clean spirit. Remember the quote in Leviticus, I think it's chapter 17. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I've given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. And remember how I've covered this, and I've mentioned there are a couple of ways to interpret it, but one way is to say that the purity of your blood also speaks to the atonement of your soul. And you cannot have a clean, pure soul if your blood is unclean. So clean up your diet, clean up your intake, what you drink, what you put on your skin, you know, what you smoke or not. You know, hopefully you're not smoking cigarettes. That's not going to create clean blood, that's for sure. So if you are, work to get off of that. We've talked about drinking red wine as something that is very beneficial for human health because of the power of grapes and resveratrol. So I'm not saying you have to be completely alcohol-free in your life. Red wine helps with purifying the blood in moderation. I don't happen to drink alcohol myself, but I have many other sources to get resveratrol anyway. So those are some things to keep in mind. It's amazing. In every sermon here, you're going to get more wisdom and information about the healing properties of God's molecules, God's foods, superfoods, herbs, you name it. And then I'm intermixing this in with covering the book of Revelation. And we'll have more chapters of that coming up. And eventually we'll get back to chapter 18 again. Wow. The city of Babylon falls in 1 hour? 1 hour? It's going to be interesting to talk about that coming up. But thank you for listening today. I'm Mike Adams with abundance.church. Be sure to visit that website. Check out all the other sermons. If you've missed any, you can enjoy them at any time. And thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.